Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Hospice of Lubbock, Happy State Bank, and the law offices of Mullen, Horde, and Brown, LLP. Now, here's your host, Ted Dotts.
Hello, I'm Ted Dotts, and welcome to Faith Matters. Today, our guest is Leon Williams, who is a guidance and counselor specialist for LISD. And Leon, I've gotten to know you in a couple of three different ways. One, I've gotten to know a little bit about you and what you do at LISD. But number two, we've worked together and I've watched you at WTOS, West Texas Organizing Strategy. And number three, I've enjoyed your humor and laughter at some social events which we've attended. Now, I'd like very much to know something about how you got to Lubbock, how you view Lubbock, and especially about your work at LISD, which intrigues me because you're working with students, I think, and oftentimes very much crisis situations, especially a crisis when it comes to living together and continuing education. So would you tell us a bit about Leon Williams?
Okay. I'm 62 years old, approaching my 63rd birthday, actually. I've been in Lubbock now for going on 34 years. I was born and raised in Washington, D.C., and during the 50s, 60s, and 70s, I migrated to Lubbock in 1980 to go to graduate school at Texas Tech. The game plan was to use Lubbock as a stepping stone to get to Houston, Dallas, some larger urban area, because bottom line is I'm a city boy. So that was the game plan. Obviously, that plan hasn't been executed well at all.
Not by plan, anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, somebody else had another plan that took over, obviously.
So how would you compare? You came out of Washington, D.C. to Lubbock, Texas, and you lived here 34 years, but what's the difference? Especially I'd be interested in racial attitudes that you've noticed or the difference for you there.
Wow. The biggest difference is the pace of living. I mean, the pace of living here is a lot slower. That's number one. And I've found that attractive over time as I've gotten older, obviously. It was initially a tension there because I was still younger and had that kind of party feel to my persona. Whereas over time and raising a family, you tend to lose that kind of persona. You ask about the racial situation. The Washington that I experienced, 50s, 60s, and 70s, was mostly black or white. Since I have moved away and been gone for 34 years now, it is totally different. It is much more of an international city, a multi-ethnic city now. We have a large Hispanic population there now, let alone internationals from other countries because of Washington, D.C. being the city that it is. So, totally different place than what I grew up in.
Because there are different groups, ethnic groups now,
yes.
Where it was more just two when you grew up?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
And how would Lubbock compare? We have different ethnic groups, too. Do you have a comparison?
In Lubbock, pretty much, we have the three ethnic mm-hmm. groups with the Hispanic, black, and white. And I see Lubbock really more in terms of the so-called minority population. The Hispanic population is a lot larger and more influential, as I see it.
Along that line, I'd be interested to know, now you are a guidance and counselor specialist. Number one, how did you get into that profession? And number two, how do you work that out, especially when I think of students at LISD?
My training is in psychology. So when I relocated to Lubbock to attend school at Texas Tech, it was in the graduate school of psychology. So my training has been as a counseling psychologist. I was given an opportunity to come into the Lubbock Independent School District when Mike Moses was here and superintendent. They had an entity in the school district called the Diagnostic Center, and it was directed by a counseling psychologist. And she was looking to have a multi-ethnic and diverse workforce within the Diagnostic Center. So I was able to get in on that. And that entity stayed intact for about 3 years after I got in. It was part of a bond initiative that obviously had been passed by the voters prior to my coming into the district. And after it closed up, I was absorbed into the counseling department within the district and became a counseling specialist through the counseling department.
So tell me something. What does a counseling specialist do? What would your day-to-day be like, Leon?
Well, right now, my day-to-day is working as a quasi-administrator and also a counselor. And so because of my training, I've been trained as a counselor. And so I perform counseling duties, individual and even small group.
Now, is this with students or
with
faculty?
Students. Oh, definitely with students. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. And what would bring a student in to see you as a counselor?
It might be a crisis situation going on, typically at the peer level. But sometimes the crises that come from home, and so it can be both ways.
How about abuse, child abuse? Is that a big factor in what you do when you counsel with students?
That's going to be something that once identified, we're going to punt, so to speak. We're going to shift that over to Children's Protective Service. And so we do have cases that we identify. Typically, a teacher will see something first and then say something to the counselor. Sometimes the student may come to me, but I don't experience a large volume of cases to that degree. But there are cases, for sure.
So is there some particular problem that you experience more than others? You mentioned the peer problems.
I'm really disenchanted with the negative peer interactions that I see with young people. It seems like young people are their worst enemies. They just seem to really go hard at each other in a very much more viral way. I recall when I was coming through, and maybe this is due to some loss of memory on my part, or selective memory, if you will, but it just seems that maybe the level of animosity that these young people have with each other gets inflamed more with the whole social media context that things are happening in. So now young people can express themselves in this social media, and it gets broadcast to just in a larger, more public way.
Wow, so social media itself increases more violence? Am I following you there?
I think so. That's my hypothesis. I guess I'd have to do some research to confirm it. But it's just so often that young people are using Facebook to express their feelings, and it goes out to such a large number of people all at one time. And so if they don't like somebody, everybody knows about it.
Oh, it magnifies it.
It magnifies it. I was searching for that word.
And so compared to when you, say, were young, now with the social media, it's more the bullying.
Exactly.
The violence between students.
Exactly.
Wow. So is there some kind of core policy that LISD has about violence, especially physical violence or emotional, verbal violence?
Well, we certainly don't condone it, and so we do all we can to cut it off. Where my setting in particular, we don't allow students to use Facebook at all because we know what it could lead to. So we rather err on the side of caution.
Leon, we need to go into a break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts, and our guest today is Leon Williams, who is a guidance and counselor specialist for LISD. And we've been getting into a bit about increased violence among especially the young people that he works with. And so I'm wondering, Leon, you have raised, I believe, 3 children yourself that are grown and now adults.
That's correct.
What's the difference, say, when you were raising your children and the level of violence you observed and now as a counselor that you observe and deal with every day?
I don't remember my sons experiencing that level of animosity. They were all athletes, and so a lot of times what we see is that students who involve themselves in extracurricular activities, it's a good insulating factor. And so as a counseling specialist and counselors throughout the district, we encourage students to involve themselves in extracurricular activities, for personal development and also for social interaction, positive social interaction. My sons, again, were active that way. And so I never felt that they were having any problems with negative peer pressure.
Huh. How about you yourself when you were that age? Did you experience negative peer pressure and the kind of violence that you deal with?
No, I didn't. Now that you make me think about it, I call myself a schoolboy. I was above average student during that time, and I wasn't a varsity athlete, but I did play baseball, so I was a varsity baseball player. And I had a social group that I was comfortable with, and I guess that kept me insulated enough. But generally speaking, the level of violence in my era was minimal.
You know, in my life, I've known several school principals, and even just recently, school principals have mentioned to me on occasion that they often deal with fighting on the campus. Did that when I was young, 60, 70 years ago, but that they mention it to me in just a conversation makes me wonder, how much is the actual fight in school, the violence of that kind, active on the campuses?
Things can pop off any minute, especially if students aren't engaged. And I'm using that term because of my assistant principal where I am. He focuses on that. It's interesting you asked me about that, given today, prior to my coming in, there were two fights on my campus. One case, it for sure involved a change in our routine, our campus routine, where we focus on having students engaged in our morning activity before they go to their first period class. And today we had gotten away from it because of the testing schedule that was in place. But the second fight was in my classroom, and it popped off and really caught me off guard. But I was so pleased that students broke it up. In both cases, matter of fact, the first fight was in the cafeteria, second fight was in my classroom. And in both instances, I had students break it up, and I'm feeling really good about that.
Well, that's good to hear, because I remember from my high school days, we all stood around and egged it on.
Right.
Why would students break it up now, and in two cases, back to back?
I'll be honest, I'm not clear at this point, other than some sense of morality on their part, some sense of their not wanting maybe one of the parties not to get in any more trouble and get possibly sent to another setting. I'm not clear. Maybe we can get them in and you could interview them.
Well, good. That might be well worth it. But that raised the question for me. You mentioned the word their morality. Where I've noticed you work with, say, WTOS, you've done other work in the community, you've done a lot for Lubbock in these 34 years you've lived here.
Tried to.
Where'd you get what kind of moral sense? How come you have that sense that you'd contribute yourself to a community?
You know, I grew up in a very privileged environment. My father was an attorney in Washington, D.C., and so, and I'm one of two children. And as a fact, when I was born, my older sister was married and starting her family, and so I basically grew up as only child. And so I grew up very privileged. And my sense of giving back comes from my recognition of my growing up with privilege. And so I just feel that that's what the Lord calls for us to do. I forgot the scripture that says about much given, as much as expected.
Much as expected.
Yeah, okay. So, and I really believe that.
So who influenced you with that? I mean, your father's an attorney, so you had that kind of model. What influenced you to be even aware that you had privilege? I think that's a big step in human life, to be aware aware that you're privileged. Where did you get that awareness?
Well, I think about the neighborhood I grew up in. I grew up in basically a working class neighborhood. And with my father being an attorney, we tended to have more physical things in terms of, he always drove a fancy car, always had, you know, the latest clothes, and just had more spending money than a lot of my buddies. And so those kinds of...
So part of your sense of privilege, you compared what your father had to what other people had, and then you drew that conclusion that you were privileged?
Yes.
And how about your own children? Do they have that same sense of their privileged people? Or
that's a good question. We'll have to get them out here and you can interview them and ask them. We try to remind them that they are, whether they appreciate it or not, and try to help increase their appreciation. And I think they do. I think they realize that.
So what's the difference in, say, the moral sense of the students you have today and your own moral sense when you were 18 or 19?
I think maybe the social context in terms of when I was 18, 19, you had the Vietnam War going on. The Civil Rights Movement, we were just past the Civil Rights Movement. Integration was just at its full-headedness, if you will. And so you had these social factors, these larger social factors that I think shaped my thinking at that time. I know that they did. I just don't know that presently the same social factors are there. My sense is that over time, materialism has come into play and is doing more shaping of young people's attitudes.
So you came up aware, say, like of Martin Luther King. You would have a strong awareness of him?
You know, I hate to admit that I did not. I did not. And yet, I was president at the March on Washington, but I didn't have a full appreciation for the Civil Rights Movement. But as I moved into college, I became aware of.
Was that through college classes or your peer groups? Or?
Peer groups peer groups mostly. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's all right, how much awareness did you have of racism?
Growing up in the Washington, D.C. of the 50s, the neighborhood that I grew up in was all white initially, and then white flight took over and it became all black. And generally speaking, whites migrated away from the city out into the suburban areas, which in my area was the Prince George's County, Maryland. And so there was this feeling of fear that we grew up with, or tension, that if we went out into Maryland, KKK might get you. So we always grew up with that tension.
Leon, thank you. We're going to take a break now. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts, and we're visiting today with Leon Williams, who is Guidance and Counseling Specialist for LISD. Leon, you remind me, I had a black bishop some years ago, and the bishop once told me that he felt like he always had to be well-dressed, be very careful out in public because he was black, and he had this kind of fear that he could step someplace that would get him into trouble. And he was a man, a bishop of the church, of my church. So is this a kind of fear, or does that raise an illustration for you that you've lived with in your life?
Yes, I would agree with that. I grew up with that kind of admonishment from my father in particular. Again, he was an attorney. He was a prosecuting attorney initially, so he grew up in Washington in that white world, so to speak. And so it was always this thing of having to be twice as good. It was that kind of message given. And to be honest, I personally resented that. I felt like that was very confining, it was unfair, and I resented it to a large degree.
Well, it could be Alderson, but I have black grandchildren, and I know my grandson now, when he's gotten his driver's license, his father had to educate him on if he stopped by the police to keep both hands on the wheel and to be very careful and well-mannered, because he's in more danger than, say, I would have been when I started driving. So that kind of thing, is that current among students that you have at LISD who are black?
That same feeling?
Same feeling of fear?
No. This younger generation, they're very much more courageous and bold, but I think in a reckless sense. To be honest, I try to teach them what my father taught me in as far as that kind of activity. In other words, not be loud and boisterous at a time when maybe you get stopped by the police. And I have found it works pretty good. Matter of fact, to be honest with you, I've had, my wife and I laugh about this, but we got stopped by the policeman in Hereford one time, going to watch a basketball game, one of our son's basketball games. And the taillight was out, so the police stopped us and whatnot. And so at the end of, you know, talking to us and checking our registration, license, that kind of thing, the routine thing, he was very complimentary of us and our behavior. My wife and I thought, what did we do so odd? I mean, we just cooperated with him, you know? Obviously, he's not used to black people cooperating.
Or at least would have that prejudice, perhaps.
Okay.
Wow. That's the thing may work for the good of all of us. Maybe it'd make us more well-mannered. Who knows if it takes that twist? I hope it has that infectious quality. So you've lived these 34 years here in Lubbock. Do you have some observations about Lubbock and racism and anything that you, conclusions you might have drawn?
Lubbock's changing, like every place else. When we first came in 1980, we did have an incident of housing discrimination in our second year here. And as it boiled down, it turned out to be one person's act, one manager's act at a particular setting. We haven't felt racism in a very blatant manner. I think, you know, we look at Lubbock as being de facto segregated, basically, and segregation coming from economic issues more so. But Lubbock is integrating more and more. The Lubbock area is, as I see it, is at a different point in time with racial integration than we've ever seen it. I think it's at full blast.
So if I could ask you now, 34 years ago, you came here to Texas Tech, do your graduate work in psychology.
Mm-hmm.
If you met a young man at your age 34 years ago and he was thinking about coming to Tech, what would you tell him you had learned after your 34 years? Let's say he's a young black man who's coming here for graduate study.
In 2014?
Yes.
Oh, well, I would tell him this is a great place.
Now, why is that? He said, why is it a great place?
Well, opportunity. I think Lubbock has a lot of opportunity still left even for an African-American in a lot of different areas because we don't have large numbers of professional African Americans. We have a handful, and so the opportunity, I think, is ripe.
Is that because of our economic situation, or because of more receptivity to ethnic difference, or what generates the opportunity?
What generates opportunity? I think maybe the opportunity has been here for a long time. But I think there's a consciousness, a better, more heightened consciousness of diversity now than once there may have been.
Uh-huh.
And so, the opportunity has presented itself from that more so.
Suppose a young person asks you about, say, the religious life here in Lubbock. Would you have some counsel or a response to him on that if he asked you?
Well, we have the range of denominations, as I see it. I mean, you can seek out a denomination of your choice. Naturally, we have larger groups of certain denominations than others. But I think we have a range, as I have
experienced. So there'd be a wide choice for
exactly.
A young man to work out his religious beliefs.
I believe so.
Groups, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's been good for you here in Lubbock, too?
I grew up Disciples of Christ. That denomination is here. I haven't been a member of a Disciples of Christ church just by my choosing, but it's there if I had, you know, wanted to choose that way.
So, another thing you might tell him, what would it be, say, about the political setting in Lubbock? What would he expect? What influences or issues or problems might he run up against, a young man coming in 2014 into Lubbock?
Yeah, now that would definitely have some black and white to it, clearly, as I see it. Clearly, the conservative thinking, political thinking, is the dominant factor here. And so if this person was a progressive-minded individual like myself, he would have problems.
What's a problem a progressive individual has like yourself?
Not enough numbers of progressive thinkers here.
Too low a population.
Too low population, exactly.
Any specific issue that is heavy on you?
Well, I mean, so many. I mean, I think about the change in the voting rights issue to an effort, as I see it, to suppress the more left-leaning political mindedness, uh-huh. A very conscious effort, and the takeover at the state level in the legislature. I just don't see we have diversity of thinking at all going on there when you have one party dominant.
For you, do you have an illustration or a thought about diversity of thinking? If you had to say, here's an example of diversity of thinking, do you have something that comes to mind?
Well, I guess for Texas, if I think about Texas, immigration reform. Clearly, that's an issue that needs to be addressed, and yet the conservatives want to address it in a way that seems to be so mean-spirited and not inclusive. And then when you examine that motive, you realize that to the degree that they win, those voters get siphoned off away from the voting body that would vote against their ideas.
Leon, no wonder I wanted to get to visit with you. That's a good issue to talk about, diversity of thinking. You put your finger right on one of the most important ones. Thank you for being with us on this program, Faith Matters. You've done a very good job of helping us all think.
Thank you for asking.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Ted Dotts, and you've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with our guest Leon Williams.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters is brought to you by Hospice of Lubbock, Happy State Bank, and the law firm of Mullen, Horde & Brown, LLP. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.